Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Constellation Studios, a mixed-use artist's workspace for all types of printmaking and paper projects, featuring printing presses, bookmaking, type shop, and wet paper studio. For info, constellation-studios-net. Support for programming also comes from the Lincoln Community Foundation, hosting the Lincoln COVID-19 Response Fund to assist nonprofits that support vulnerable populations impacted by the pandemic. Donation information at lcf.org. Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Most of today's show is pre-recorded as we protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Coming up on the show this morning, a special project from the National Willa Cather Foundation in Red Cloud. We'll learn how the Lead Center is still providing concerts while allowing social distancing. And a local composer and pianist is releasing a new album of comforting intimate music. Also on this week's show, some highlights of just a few of the many amazing musicians and poets we've had on Friday Live, including a cowboy poet and rancher from the Sandhills. When events near you have been canceled, we bring you performances right here, and we'll start our show this morning with one of those. McKay Tebbs is assistant professor at Chadron State College. He is a composer, teaches video lessons, plays jazz guitar, and he has an album out called The Way. We will hear his title track from that album. That's McKay Tebbs playing the title track from his album, The Way, here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Just one of the music segments on today's show. Stay with Friday Live. In about 4 minutes, we'll hear poetry from R.P. Smith. Honorees chosen for a Governor's Arts Award this year is Linda Garcia Perez, dedicated to creating, teaching, and exhibiting Mexican, Latino, folk, and indigenous arts and traditional culture across Nebraska. She will also be featured on NET Television in an upcoming episode of Nebraska Stories. A longtime children's librarian, she creates visual art and is a storyteller. Through her art, she celebrates her Chicana heritage. It was a flame ignited in her last year of college during a visit to her grandparents' homeland.
I picked Mexico, of course, so I went and stayed there, scared to death. I got off the airport and said, oh my gosh, I've never seen so many Mexicans in my whole life. I saw art everywhere, so I started looking up a lot of the myths and legends of Mexico, and that's how I became a storyteller as well as an artist. And you wouldn't believe that I wouldn't talk when I was younger.
Linda was born in Omaha, a second-generation American, raised in a large family. Since her mother worked, Linda would spend much of her time with her immigrant grandparents. Spanish was spoken at home. Linda struggled with English when she first started school, but then found her voice.
And I start crying. She said, what? I got a stupid teacher. She doesn't know anything. I'm in real trouble. I'm never going to learn. I went up to my teacher the next day. I slammed that apple down, a manzana apple. And I had for breakfast avena, oatmeal, leche, milk. And I felt so smart. And I went and sat down and I thought, I'm smarter than the teacher because I speak two languages and see the world differently. So I knew the power of words then.
Art became a language that helped Linda build friendships.
All the girls had these fancy paper dolls. We couldn't afford them. Our money was super tight. I started making my own paper dolls. Eventually, I had to make dolls for everybody. And I taught them how to make the clothes and how to trace it. So they put away all their dolls and ended up making paper dolls with me.
When Linda graduated from high school, she studied art at the College of St. Mary. She was the first college graduate in her family. During her trip to Mexico as a young woman, she discovered the brilliant, colorful art of her heritage.
That one exposure changed my course, changed who I am completely. Growing up, I learned that paper was made from plants and trees. So I'm really dealing with a living thing. And I like that idea of working with a living thing that was once alive.
Linda also shares her storytelling and art with others, educating and empowering others through art.
And it's okay to be scared. It's okay to be fearful. It's okay to not know where you're going. But as long as you're going.
Linda Garcia Perez is one of this year's Governor's Arts Awards honorees. She will be featured on NET Television's Nebraska Stories on Thursday, April 9th at 8 p.m. Central. Thanks to Kay Hall for production help on this story. Also watch for another artist feature and another Governor's Arts Award honoree on Thursday, April 16th at 8 p.m. NET Television's Nebraska Stories will feature sculptor Herb Minnery, who grew up on a ranch near Bartlett, Nebraska. For more information, head to netnebraska.org. A Hastings pianist and a guest artist are teaming up to provide a live-streamed piano festival tomorrow.
What's going to happen first is Dr. Benjamin Downs, our guest, will present a recital, and then he's going to give a talk on interleaved practice. I've worked with him in the summers at Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp in Michigan, and I've seen this presentation, and it's very fascinating, and he plays so well using this method, so you'll want to hear that.
Hear my full conversation with pianist Jonathan Sakasits on this week's Friday Live Extra, available wherever you find your podcasts, or you can listen online at netnebraska.org/radio. Stay with Friday Live. The Sheldon Museum of Art may be closed, but you can still get closer to an exhibition there via the Modern Art Notes podcast. We'll learn more in about 13 minutes. Next on Friday Live, we've got a special poetry segment from the heart of the Sandhills. We had the pleasure of hosting cowboy poet R.P. Smith on our show from Ord last year. He was kind enough to send a couple of poems our way for today's show. Thanks, R.P., and I hope things are well there on the ranch.
Good morning to you, Genevieve, and to all your Friday Live listeners. Social distancing involves a little more space here on the ranch than most of you folks are privileged to at the moment. I'm very grateful for the space, and it brings to mind a poem that I've titled, Bareback. This day when I go riding, I'll leave my saddle where it hangs, bareback. Today that's how I'll ride. On this old mare that I trust, I'll wear the sweat and hair and dust, a gift received from my pony's hide. This day I will ride slower, so I will miss not even one of the miracles placed just beyond the view of those who know their destination, focused on their goal, overlook the beauty as they are passing through. The ride's completion is not my purpose. The journey is why I mount. Her skin twitches at the feel of just my weight. She raises doubt as I swing onto her back, only bridle reins in hand. My searching for simplicity, she does not understand. I wish that we be on our way, and soon she will not mind the freedom from the burden of my security left behind. I'll feel the soreness in my sinews and the sting of salty sweat, and though I know discomfort, I will not regret. A life lived with nothing felt would surely leave me numb, and when the hard times come, I quickly would succumb. Are hard times to be avoided? My efforts would be in vain, and I would have no understanding of others' challenges or pain. If I could avoid all suffering, knowing joy would be the cost. No thrill of the moment, no tragedy of moment lost. This day there is no hurry for my job to be done, no task to be completed, no battle to be won. I will have the memory, should ever I look back, of the pleasure of a ride with saddle left on rack. I'd like to share a more recent poem with you this morning. I'm not sure if I've ever actually completed a poem. The main body of this one came to me in October, but the current last verses were inspired a few weeks back. I've titled it, A Good Day to Remember. A good day to remember leaving. It seems a random thought as I sort off three teenage cows and drive them to the lot. Pondering cows' memories, a strange thing to cross my mind. Minnie works them up the ridge and we leave the calves behind. A good day to remember leaving. It almost makes it feel right. Bellies full from a fresh patch of grass. I expected more of a fight. Don't make it go so easy, girls. I already feel bad. You've outlasted your compadres and good years we've had. If it was up to me and payments weren't coming due, you could die here on the place. Just let you cycle through. Is that your intended purpose? This question I will hold. I would rather load you in the sunshine than lose you in the cold. That really ain't an option and won't pay down the loans. Banks might skin off the carcass. They care not to see the bones. See, girls, I keep them in business, just like you've done for me. And when this runner makes his course, it may not end so differently. A good day to remember staying. Blessings I recognize. I can still bark at the buzzards. I can still fan off the flies. And trail a line of thought that brings a little peace while sorting coal cows to make a payment on the school section lease. A good day to remember staying, my spirit lifted on a prayer. From the place my pony stumbled, lay me to rest right there. Press the clay around me and let the grass grow tall. Until I hear the trumpet and I rise to Jesus' call. A good day to remember leaving. Hoofbeats thundering like drums. I will meet them in the air. My God, thy kingdom comes.
That's cowboy poet R.P. Smith. He read A Good Day to Remember. Before that, he recited his poem, Bareback. Thanks again, R.P., for taking time out of what I'm sure is a busy season on the ranch. Well, almost any season is busy on the ranch, taking some time to share your poetry with us. R.P. recites his work and shares news of the day regularly online in his podcast, Homegrown. Shops around Philadelphia, Boston, and New York in 1993, made her major label debut in 1995. She appeared on this show last after a trip to Cuba, and she has been writing, recording, and touring up until the pandemic darkened all the stages. There's hope, though. The Lead Center for Performing Arts has partnered with Susan Werner to bring you her live streaming event online and to your home. Susan, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today about this online event.
You bet. Thanks for being in touch. I appreciate it.
So this is billed as Susie on Sundays, live online, a salute to farming, Hayseed, which references your 2013 album. How did you decide on that content for this?
You mentioned the change in concertizing going on right now and that stages are dark. Yes, they are dark. Some of us who already had done experiments online were ready to try something different. On weekends, instead of playing in a room with people, we would do a live show online. And so I committed early on, as soon as we all went into this phase of not being able to leave the house, of doing an every Sunday night show on Facebook Live, like a 7 o'clock show, like Milton Berle, like the Carol Burnett show, like the old days of television, when a show really was on at a certain hour. That's when the show was on. Almost like gathering around the dinner table or the fireplace, and we're going to have a little entertainment. And these things have gone so crazy well, maybe because they're helping many of us stay in touch with each other and feel like someone is doing something right now, live in the moment, that I can witness. And the Lead Center, my friends over there, saw that I was doing this every Sunday night, and we're teaming up to bring this show to Nebraska on this Sunday night at 6 p.m. Central, and I hope that your listeners can join us.
So you're actually webcasting from your home then?
From my office here in Philadelphia.
You mentioned the aspect of having to tune in at a specific time. So 6 p.m. Central, there's so much digital content these days. It's not something people are used to doing, at least not for a few decades now.
But there were, if some of your listeners might remember, in the last couple of years, there were these live episodes of Chicago Fire or something. And some of your listeners may remember these things that happened the last couple of years where they would have like a live Sound of Music or a live musical starting at 7 p.m. in the evening or something. And the performance was happening in real time. And it creates an excitement that you can't really creative, the stakes aren't quite as high. When you're recording something, you can fix it. When it's live, you can't. And so it gives performances a certain kind of energy, certainly immediacy, that I think you can actually feel through the screen. And it makes us feel more, I think, like we're at an actual show.
You're sitting in front of your computer or screen, like we're all sitting in front of our computers or other screens. How do viewers interact with you then during the webcast?
There's a running chat up the right side where people can type in comments. And part of the fun of this is for people watching the show to interact with each other and recognize each other. And in that way, it's also like going to a show in your town where you see, oh, there's my dentist.
Oh. Right.
Oh, there's my cousin. Oh, there's, right? And that's been a big, fun part of this entire endeavor has been the connectedness that comes along with it. And certainly that's the thing we're missing the most is those kinds of interactions, just the incidental bumping into of someone who's familiar to us, someone we're happy to see. So, again, this thing has gone so crazy well. The theme of this Sunday night show is agriculture, and it's songs that I wrote that were commissioned by the Lead Center there in Lincoln and by the Institute for Agriculture and Natural Resources at the University of Nebraska. And these songs will all be about farms, farmers, and the people who love them. And for those listeners you have that have agriculture in their background, I think these songs might remind them of some of what they love about their own heritage.
We heard a little bit of Back to the Land before you and I started chatting there. When was your very first Susie on Sundays, and how many do you think you'll continue to do?
This is going to be the fourth one this Sunday. I don't know how this happened to me, but I was online and I just all of a sudden said, well, we'll just continue doing this as long as this weirdness continues. It looks to me like this is going to continue through April and through May. We'll see if by then maybe the warm weather makes a difference in two things. Maybe the warm weather will slow down the rate of infection. And also, I think people will want to be outdoors and maybe away from their screens. So I'm here to keep us all company for at least a month and maybe two.
Susie on Sundays is the next featured Lead Live online event. Susan Werner presents A Salute to Farming, Hayseed, which will stream live online via Facebook, and that is this Sunday at 6 p.m. Susan, a pleasure talking with you again.
Thank you. Thanks for finding me. Thanks, Genevieve.
This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. Be sure to check out the arts calendar on our website. There are online-only events showing up. Keep in mind that some events listed there may have been canceled or postponed, so it's a good idea to call ahead or check websites for changes. The address is netnebraska.org/radio. Just click events. Here's a highlight from the calendar. Currently, the Empty Opera House series is continuing, presented by Minden Opera House. The next art session will feature work by photographer Naya Carmen, and tomorrow at 11 a.m., the String Beans will be featured in a concert of children's music on the Minden Opera House Facebook page. For more information about these live streaming events or other events, or to add your own event, visit our website, netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture. On the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Next, here on Friday Live, we'll hear a recording by Lincoln-based pianist Paul Barnes with a piece by composer Jonah Gallagher titled Ad Infinitum.
Thank you.
That's Ad Infinitum by composer Jonah Gallagher. We heard Paul Barnes playing Gallagher's music, just one of the Nebraska musicians we're featuring each week here on Friday Live. There's more piano music later, too. We'll learn about a brand new album available from pianist and composer Philip Daniel. And the Willa Cather Foundation has found something special going on for National Poetry Month. That's ahead as well. While the Sheldon Museum of Art on campus is closed, there is still a way to get closer to the art through listening. I'm joined next by Tyler Green, host of the Modern Art Notes podcast. Tyler, it's nice to meet you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. First of all, let's just give listeners kind of the 15-second pitch about the podcast, what it is and how it started.
Sure. We've been going for almost 10 years. It's a series of long format conversations with artists and with art historians and curators and authors about the work they're making, whether that's paintings or sculpture or books or exhibitions. We've done about 435, 440 episodes now, and we come out every week on Thursdays.
And how did you become the host?
I had been working in journalism and media and writing criticism for about a decade. And then when podcasts started up, in the early 2010s, I saw that there weren't any about art. And I had concurrently noticed that there wasn't really a place within the Great Recession-affected media environment of the early 2010s for long-format, extended conversations with people who worked in and around making art and writing the histories of art. And I thought there would be an audience for that, or I hoped and expected that there would be an audience for that. So I figured, why not give it a try?
And do you often partner with the Sheldon Museum of Art here in Nebraska?
Almost every segment on our show is about a museum exhibition. And so sometimes those museum exhibitions are at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and sometimes they're at the Sheldon, and sometimes they're at, you know, the Art Institute of Chicago or St. Louis. We try to go to where the most important and interesting shows and things and presentations are.
We're going to hear an excerpt here from your podcast next, featuring Renee Stout, whose work is at the Sheldon right now. Anything you want to say about what we're about to hear, Tyler?
Renee Stout is an artist with a 30-year career. She was the first living artist to have her work exhibited at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African Art. She lives in Washington now. She's still making work. She's kind of a generation of women artists who was substantially skipped over by the art market. The art market's biases toward men, particularly white men, are well known and have been well established. And Renee was one of those artists who didn't fit what the market in the 90s and in much of the aughts expected an artist to look like and to make. And so it's wonderful that many institutions have prioritized collecting her work, recognizing that the market really missed kind of a generation. And so it's great to see her work having been collected and on view at museums like the Sheldon.
Tyler, I look forward to listening to this segment from your podcast. Thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for your interest.
And this excerpt is from episode 437 called Renee Stout, True to Nature.
Renee Stout, welcome to the Modern Art Notes podcast.
Hi, Tyler. Thank you for having me.
Your work is rich with investigations into extensions of riffs on spirituality and how it has been practiced by people in diaspora and especially in forced diaspora. What about spirituality and its relationship to migrations first caught your attention?
You know, it's a really complex question. And at first, I didn't realize why I was really, on how many levels I was attracted to the idea of African-based spirituality. And now that I'm a more mature artist and I can really, in hindsight, you know, explain much better the reasons why I do the kind of work that I do and the things that inspire me, I realize, especially now, that my work has always been a form of reclamation, in that as an African-American woman, I wanted to know what that meant. And so I look at the 60s and I see how during the civil rights movement, you know, we decided that we needed to reclaim that part of ourselves that had been rejected by society, our hair, we embraced our skin color, we embraced a whole lot of things, but the one thing that seemed to remain taboo was the religion. There was still this adherence to Christianity and the fear that if you even questioned that, you know, you were going to go to hell. And so there was that fear of in looking in that area. And because I was never forced to go to church when I was growing up, I don't feel like I had the fear of questioning Christianity. And so when I first encountered certain objects in the Carnegie Museum when I was growing up as a child and later found out that they were ritualistic objects and that they had spiritual connections, and I started really looking into that, and that's when my work really started to change and became very spiritual, or I investigated the spiritual more and sort of internalized those sort of spiritual beliefs. And so I feel that over time, that my work has become the resistance to the things that we faced as African Americans during our whole history in this country. My investigations have always been a kind of resistance.
So as you got interested in spiritual objects or objects that had relationships with spirituality as a young person in Pittsburgh, and then as you moved away and had access to other material, what about the spirituality and its relationship to those objects interested you? Did you study or research faith traditions or faith practices, or was your interest more oriented around the objects, the physical objects themselves?
When I was first starting out, I was more focused on the aesthetics of the object. I liked I was trained as a painter, and I was more focused on painting. And then at some point, I discovered, simultaneously, it seemed, I started really looking at African art, the art of Betty Saar, and the art of Joseph Cornell. And all three of those way of working is using found material, assembled materials. And so aesthetically, at first, I was intrigued with them, but that spiritual aspect, the fact that I knew that they were coming from a spiritual context, it made me start to do the research. And the more I researched, the more I became interested. And so it started off just what they look like, and then later on, the whole philosophy behind them started to become even more important.
That's an excerpt from a recent episode of the Modern Art Notes podcast, hosted and produced by Tyler Green, in which artist Renee Stout gives insight into one of her works in the collection of Sheldon Museum of Art. Tyler's podcast is just one way to visit the Sheldon virtually. They're also providing daily features on their website with stories, interviews, and videos. And they're one of many museums across the country using the hashtag MuseumFromHome to help students, families, and art lovers find content online. For more information, find a link on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org. This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Artists, illustrator, and illustrators are featured on this week's All About Books. Pat Leach welcomes back UNL's Richard Graham, who introduces a couple of big books, including the massive graphic novel called Rusty Brown by Omaha native Chris Ware.
This is a story that took decades to write. Some of these images may seem familiar, like on the cover of the Prairie Schooner that Chris Ware did back in 2007, and as an exhibition guide for our very own Sheldon Memorial Art Gallery back in 2000. And a lot of those images, because they take place in Nebraska, follow and sort of reappear and maybe are slightly reimagined in this book here, Rusty Brown, which was published in October of 2019.
Learn more about Chris Ware's graphic novel, along with early 20th century illustrator Harrison Katie, creator of the popular Peter Rabbit comic strip. It's all online at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Still to come on our show this morning, a new project from Nebraska composer and pianist Philip Daniel, as well as a way to hear recordings of poetry by Willa Cather. Next, here on Friday Live, we'll hear from a poet we've had the pleasure of hosting a few times on our show. Marge Sizer reads a couple of her poems about music. After she was kicked out of the garden, and I guess I'll never play a dobro.
Here's a poem that ends with playing the piano, imagining that that's what Eve does now that she's kicked out of the garden. A modern day Eve. It's called After She Was Kicked Out of the Garden. The story says she was thrown out, but actually she leaped to freedom, that last chasm too big to step across. She chose to jump. Let me imagine her landing on her feet, so solidly herself, alone but not lonely. Let me imagine her on a trail slanting up through pines, or, more likely, sitting at the piano. Not perfection, she says, which is chains, but instead playing, making a path along the melody. Her fingers sure and slender, finding caves to enter, finding valleys to scramble down. Her foot on the pedal whenever it's right. And the oval of her face, serene, like a moon in its appointed place, above the rugged arpeggios. Here's a poem with a bit of humor. It deals with life and also with not being able to play a stringed instrument. It's called I Guess I'll Never Play a Dobro. A dobro being, of course, a kind of guitar. I guess I'll never play a dobro. I bought myself a ukulele. Don't laugh. I wanted to make music. I could afford a uke, but I couldn't make my index finger press the C string, while my third finger stayed behind hard on the A. And my ring finger, always the rat fink, reached out like a spider leg for the E. So many ukuleles in my closet, things I wanted to understand, or at least sit down to breakfast with. Take surfing, for instance. I love to hear a surfer talk about the curl and the break and being part of the wave. Part of the ocean, think of it. That's what I wanted. That's why I married a guy whose love didn't hold a tuning any better than a $40 stringed instrument. I recognize a wipeout when it happens. I was grateful when the sea spit me coughing onto the shore. There were people watching, so I stood up, my body aching, and laughed as I ran my fingers through my dripping hair.
That poem was I Guess I'll Never Play a Dobro by Marge Sizer. Before that, she shared her poem After She Was Kicked Out of the Garden. We're so glad to still be able to feature poems each week here on Friday Live. If you've enjoyed the music and poetry on today's show and want to hear it again or share with someone, we podcast the show each week. You can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. Poetry Month, and the Willa Cather Foundation has launched a project in celebration that anyone can access online. Ashley Olson is executive director for the Willa Cather Foundation in Red Cloud, and she joins me to talk about this project. Good morning, Ashley.
Hi, Genevieve. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. Wednesday morning on the National Willa Cather Center's YouTube channel, a series of videos launched. Tell us who is in these videos and what the content is.
We are very pleased to be launching what we're looking at as a poem a day project, though it's quite possible there will be more than one poem released per day throughout the month of April. We're excited to have a large assortment of readers signed on to share Willa Cather's poetry in honor of National Poetry Month. And coincidentally, Cather's first published book was a book of poetry called April Twilights. So having National Poetry Month in April and being able to share work from April Twilights this month is something coincidental but really fun to build excitement and to help people engage with Cather's literature in this time of social distancing.
It occurs to me a lot of people talk about Cather's novels, of course, and maybe some of her short stories. In her poetry, I'm curious, what's some of the subject matter that she uses? What do we hear in these poems?
Well, like a lot of Cather's work, the subject matter found in her poetry does vary quite a bit. Cather studied the classics during her time in Red Cloud as a child, but also during her time at the University of Nebraska. So in the poetry, you'll certainly find some old world inspiration, but Cather also, true to form, takes us back to the plains of Nebraska and some of the experiences that she had growing up here as a young child. Actually, the first poem in April Twilights is dedicated to her brothers, Roscoe and Douglas. And it's very evocative of her time in Red Cloud when she was a child playing with her brothers in the Republican River Valley. So wide and varied, and I think readers will enjoy hearing these poems and thinking about them in the context of what later became some of Cather's published works in the form of short fiction as well as her novels.
Looking at the list of just a few of the readers who are participating in this project, Ashley, we just featured our Nebraska State poet Matt Mason last week, and I see he's one of your guests reading poetry. In addition to Nebraska sports broadcaster Kent Pavelka, let's connect for people who maybe aren't as familiar with Cather's work, that last name there.
Kent Pavelka is the grandson of Anna Pavelka, who was the prototype for Willa Cather's Antonia in the novel My Antonia. So Kent's grandmother was Anna Pavelka, a longtime friend of Willa Cather's.
It's pretty amazing. I also see some pretty famous names, too. PBS viewers may well be familiar with Ken Burns and Roseanne Cash's name. How did you go about sourcing all of these people to read?
We try to do the best we can to track people of note, I should say, who have publicly expressed an affinity for Cather and her work. And Roseanne Cash is one of the many people who has publicly stated that she's a fan of Cather. And so this project was really a perfect opportunity for us to reach out and invite some of these folks to engage with Cather and take part in the work we're doing to share her writing more broadly.
Something about reading aloud, too, seems so nostalgic and comforting, to be honest.
It absolutely is. I think particularly in times of uncertainty and in troubling times like these, you can really find solitude and peace in literature and just in hearing somebody read literature aloud. There's something really evocative and special about that. And it aligns perfectly with our broader mission, of course, to support the promotion of Cather's legacy, but also to promote literacy and the arts and humanities. So this project is a combination of all three of those things. And I'm excited for your listeners to get to hear some of these poems, and hopefully they bring people some comfort and some solitude during these troubling times.
And full disclosure, one of those videos is also read by me. So, Ashley, I really appreciate the Willa Cather Center inviting me to participate in that as well. Ashley Olson is executive director for the Willa Cather Foundation in Red Cloud. Cather fans anywhere can access readings of Cather's poetry during National Poetry Month here in April on the foundation's YouTube channel. Ashley, thanks so much for sharing with us about this Poetry Month project.
Well, thank you, Genevieve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Informing and inspiring, this is NET Radio and NETNebraska.org. You're listening to Friday Live. I'm joined next by another Nebraska musician, also a composer, who's been featured here on Friday Live, as well as on NET Television's What If. Philip Daniel is one of the many musicians who've found digital and online ways to reach audiences. Philip, it's great to talk with you.
It's great to be here. I'm super glad we can do this under the circumstances.
Let's start with something I saw on your website and on social media, too. There was a video you created in association with a new album, a new project for you called Always. Tell me a little bit about Always.
It's a new, I guess you could call it an EP. It's 6 tracks, and they're all like felt piano, so really intimate tunes where I put some felt over the strings of the piano so that it kind of mutes it and made it really intimate. And then I put the mics about an inch or two away so you can really hear the nuance of it, and I recorded it in a small room in my studio and started actually writing it. The first track I wrote was called Always, and wrote it about a year and a half ago, and kind of collected these 6 tracks over the last year, and they all fit within a theme of just kind of very slow rhythm and without like a melody and accompaniment, but more just kind of textures. And then I collaborated with a cellist from the Netherlands, actually via Instagram, and he added some more cello layers over the top. And it culminated in this project.
Tell me just a little bit about the cello sound that we hear on that, and what your cellist's name is, and how you were able to collaborate.
His name is Alistair Sung, and I actually found him via the music of one of my favorite living composers named Chad Lawson. And he had done work with him, and I loved the sound and what he did. And I knew I wanted strings, but I wanted it more kind of sparse and more just one cellist, not like quartet. I literally just sent him an Instagram message basically just saying just that. And luckily he was into it, and we just sent ideas back and forth. And then, we had a guy from LA mix it, and it turned out better than I had hoped.
One thing I find just somehow completely comforting are some of the sounds that you referred to here just a moment ago. Not only do you have this unique sound created by felt in the piano, but I feel like because you mic'd it so close, I hear those dampers, which if people haven't looked inside a piano, those dampers are little kind of chunks of felt. And as they move away from the strings, you hear this kind of hushed sound. I have associations with that sound. But to me, it occurred to me, it's also kind of like hushing someone or saying, they're there. You know, it has this comforting sound to me.
I love that. I've never had someone say it like that to me. Now they express it like that, I can definitely hear that. And it kind of gives it a more, like I said before, like an intimate, but also the piano itself, audio-wise, is more than just the actual note. And some of those obviously are coordinated with the rhythm, which I really like. So it creates kind of like a percussion, too.
We're going to hear a track from you titled It's Okay, which maybe I was influenced by that too in feeling that it's kind of a comforting sound.
Yeah, and that's actually the motivation behind writing that song. Yeah, it was at a time where I was probably down. I'm not exactly sure what I was feeling. I wrote that as a kind of a comfort to myself, and so hoping that it can be the same to others, and it's kind of fitting that I released it in this kind of these crazy times, and just hoping that it can bring some joy and comfort to somebody.
Something else I'll mention, we just passed Piano Day because of the 88th day of the year. There are 88 keys on the piano, right?
Best holiday.
You posted a video saying that even though you've studied piano for 20 years, you feel like you've barely scratched the surface, that you learn more and more each time you compose something new. Tell me a little bit about that feeling and what sparked you to express that in that post.
I just tried to, yeah, kind of put into words. Obviously, the piano has been what I've centered my life around. To me, it's the greatest comprehensive instrument because there is such a vast, obviously, of 88 notes, and you can do so many things at once that there's kind of infinite possibilities and, like, directions of what I can compose, of, like, how I can play. And there's just a lot of possibility where I feel that there is, I guess, a lifetime of learning ahead of me. I just really hope to get to a place that's where I'm always innovating, like the great composers, I guess, before me did. And if you, like, listen to the music of a composer from their beginning, like Beethoven, to the end, it's really changed, and he's kind of pushed the barrier. So there's a lot more to learn, and hopefully always have that mindset and not really get stuck in the same ways of composing.
I appreciate that. Philip, I'm always glad to talk with you about your music and glad to talk to you today about your new album. Really, thank you and be well.
Yes, thank you so much. It was great to chat and hope to do this in person sometime, hopefully in the near future.
We will again. I know we will.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys' support.
Philip Daniels' newest album is titled Always. The track that we'll hear is called It's Okay. Thank you.
That's a piece by pianist and composer Philip Daniel titled It's Okay. Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert. And this afternoon, Bruce Wallace is in for Laura Black on Classics by Request. We'll also carry the daily press briefing from Governor Ricketts at 2 p.m. Central Time. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of Friday Live at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall.